Rolling on ESPN 1000. With Danny and Chris, I'm David Kaplan. They are socially distanced, probably 12 feet apart. And I'm in a separate room here at our studios at ESPN 1000, the first Midwest Bank studio. Dan Graziano, we love talking football with him. He's a great friend of this show. One day, when we get our lives back and our Bears, I'm telling you, are going to be really good next year, he's going to be in town. We're going to get him in studio. We're going to get him some Chicago deep dish Malnati's pizza, and we're going to shoot the you-know-what talking football with him. That would be a lot of fun. But right now, we get him on the phone. He joins us now. Dan, how are you? And hope everyone in your family is okay.
Yeah, we're good, thanks. Same to you, of course. And, yeah, that sounds really great. I like imagining a time when I could be back in Chicago. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it would be a great time. So let's talk about this draft that's coming up. I know the GM, I think it's Kevin Colbert of the Steelers, said, I'm urging the league to add three more rounds because he said, when we get to rounds 5, 6, and 7, we haven't been able to bring guys in, look them in the eye, work them out, go through things and try and figure out their technical knowledge. He said, we're throwing darts at the board, so give us three more chances rather than making all the Wild West of free agency. How do you think this draft's going to pan out?
Yeah, I mean, as of, a call I had about 2.5 hours ago, that idea from Colbert wasn't really being considered or discussed. I think, look, everybody's going to be home, right? All the GMs and pro personnel guys and owners and everybody will be doing it from their house. They're going to be on they'll have an all 32-team conference call that's going to be live the whole time. So, like, think about that. You'll be on mute, and, like, if your laptop is glitching and you can't get your pick in, you could just sort of unmute the call and say, hey, we're picking, this is Howie Roseman from the Eagles. We're picking this guy, and now you guys are on the clock. So they're trying to build in some safeguards to make sure that if, like somebody said to me yesterday, like, how would you like a life-altering decision to hinge on the quality of your home internet service, right? Like that's a concern. So there's no doubt that they want to make sure that doesn't happen. So I think they're building in some safeguards. They're going to test the system ahead of time, make sure that it works. Really, anybody who's ever done an online fantasy draft has been through something that sounds like what the NFL is going to have to do to make sure this thing goes smoothly. Obviously, higher stakes and all, but it sounds a little bit like what we've all done when we've been at our laptops drafting fantasy football and baseball teams over the years.
So I was texting with someone from the Bears yesterday on their coaching staff, and he said, I'm telling you, all we're doing is prepping as best we can on all these players. But I've had multiple people that I've either read or I've spoken with that said, okay, do we take a risk on Tua? And I'll ask you about that in a second at the top of the draft. Okay, that's one thing. But when we get to round 5 and we go, do I take that kid out of Ashland College who I have done very little homework other than the tape study because I don't know him? Or do I go, I don't know, the guy at Oklahoma played at Oklahoma, just take him?
Right. And Ashland obviously may be a sensitive subject there in Chicago. But I think it's going to be all about preparation, right? Like if your scouts have done their work and your executives have processed their work appropriately and you have a nimble decision maker who can assess the value of the pick in the moment and trade back or trade up or do what he needs to do to maximize the pick, then you're going to be fine, just like in a normal year. But I think there's going to be more leaning on the college tape, right? Because you won't have had the interviews to the extent that you usually do. You won't have had the guy in your facility. Your doctors will not have had a chance to look him over. That might result in like a tiebreaker going one way or the other, right? Like that, like in your theoretical scenario, look, we've seen more of this guy, or we know this guy's healthy. And so if we're torn between two guys, we might lean that way. But I think every year in the draft, there are decisions that are made that way, where tiebreakers are applied, where you're torn between two guys or three guys or four guys, and you just find some way to, we took a guy that he played with last year and he speaks highly of him, that kind of thing. So I really just think it's all about who's the best prepared and who's the most agile in the draft window. And I just think that's usually the case. This year, there's just a little bit of a different foundation for it all.
All right, so let's talk about Tua Tagovailoa. We had Mike Tannenbaum on 2 days ago. Mike Tannenbaum has been a GM of two different franchises. He's had some good teams, some bad teams, but he's wildly connected in the league. His quote on our show was, and I paraphrase, but he said, it would be malpractice for a team in the top 10 to take Tua Tagovailoa. Not saying he's not a great player. You have no idea, A, how he fits in your room, and B, you don't know if he's healthy. Your doctors have not gotten to look him up and down. Right. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think what it tells us about – no, I don't agree with that. I think what it tells us about Mike is that he's risk-averse. Now, I've never been in the position he was in and never had to make the decision with the consequences behind it, so it's easy for me to say. But I think there are different kinds of GMs and different kinds of teams and different kinds of executives, and I don't think you can say what Mike said in a vacuum. Let's say you're the Miami Dolphins, right? You have the number 5 pick, and you're thinking about Tua Tagovailoa, but you're worried about his long-term durability. You know, in normal circumstances, if your pick in the first round is number 5 and you blow that pick, you are set back for years and years. And that may be the case if you blow it on a quarterback at 5. But in Miami's case this year, they also have picks 18 and 26. They have 3 first-round picks. So it's conceivable that they could take the risk on Tua and also still come away with 2 sort of franchise building block players elsewhere in that first round, so that if you missed on the quarterback, you're not as devastated as you would have been if you took him at 5 and then didn't pick again until the second round or the third round. So I think that's one way to look at it. Now, the question is, if you're Chris Greer, the Miami Dolphins GM, are you risk averse? Are you concerned? The question, as I understand it on Tua, is not, is he healed? Is he going to be ready for week one? It's, how long is he going to be an injury guy in his NFL career? Because there are GMs and executives past and present that would tell you, if a guy got hurt in college, he's going to get hurt in the pros. There's plenty of data to back that up. Now, obviously, it's not 100%, but there are people who feel that way. And because there are people who feel that way, I think there are people that would look at Tua and look at Justin Herbert and go, oh, man, I really like Tua the player, but Herbert's almost as good, and I feel like he's a better chance to play for us for 10 years and be a 15, 16-game-a-year guy. And that may be what pushes them that way. So I think it depends on the team. I think malpractice is a strong word. I think it depends on your situation and how vital it is that you get that quarterback pick right. Obviously, quarterback's vital for everyone, but I think in the case of, for instance, Miami, they may have enough other draft support this year to cushion them in case they want to take that risk.
We are talking with Dan Graziano from ESPN. Draft is up on the 23rd, 24th, 25th, and we know it's going to be like me running my fantasy draft. But there is talk. Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times, who covers the Bears, very dialed in, said the Bears have to take a quarterback at 43 or 50 because if Nick Foles has a good year and decides he's going to opt out, he may get a monster deal somewhere else, and that would mean Trubisky didn't make it, so he's off the board. They need a guy in the pipeline. I vehemently disagree, Dan, because when you get Robert Quinn at age 30 and you bring back an older Danny Trevathan and you are all in with this team to try and win right now, I'm not using one of my first 2 picks on a quarterback unless, oh my God, my coach tells me that's the next Patrick Mahomes. Do you think they should take a quarterback?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that they're in win now mode, and so in theory you wouldn't want to use that pick. But I guess when you get to 43 and or 50 and you're looking at the pick and you're saying, is the guy I'm going to take at 43 going to help me this year? Or no. I mean, I may have a list of 10 guys in this range that I want to take, and I really don't think any of them are going to help me this year. So they're all projects. One of them's a quarterback. There's more value in having a quarterback, especially if he hits. So maybe I'll take the quarterback there. So I think, again, you know, what are you looking at in terms of where the draft is at 43? Is there a killer wide receiver there that is going to be a guy that can catch 65 balls for you this year and help you get to the Super Bowl? Then of course, by all means, use pick 43 on that. But I think, you know, you always have to keep in mind the long-term value of having depth at the quarterback position, of having, you know, down the road, even if Mitchell Trubisky busts out this year and becomes the guy that's worthy of the number 2 pick, now you have a guy on the bench who you might be able to trade in a couple of years, you know, for something valuable. So, again, it's just all about the value of the pick, maximizing the value of the pick, what's available to you at that time, and what you should do in reaction to that, whether it's move out, think about a developmental guy versus a guy that can help you right now. I don't think it's a sure thing that at 43, there's going to be a guy sitting there that you're 100% sure, if you're Ryan Pace, is going to help you win games in 2020.
Okay, do you see a scenario where there is a quarterback, like Aaron Rodgers is going to the Hall of Fame, he's one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks to ever play the sport, but he was sitting there in the 20s. And even though Green Bay had an in his prime Brett Favre, they went, we can't leave that guy on the board. Is there a quarterback that could potentially slide late 20s where you go, oh, we give him 43 and 50, we can move up and get that guy. That's how good he is. Or there, who is the quarterback that could be there?
I think you look at the top four right now, if you think about Burrow and Tua and Love and Herbert in whatever order, maybe that order, those aren't the answer. I don't think those guys slide to the 20s, unless like all of a sudden everybody gets real cold feet about Tua's health, but I don't see that happening. So I think the next guy you would look at is maybe a Jacob Eason people like a little bit. I think he looks like he might be a guy that can sneak into the late first round. That's probably the name that jumps out. I mean, I think I've seen some people talk about like Jalen Hurts as a developmental guy, but that's probably more like a late second or third round pick at best. So, that's a big move. If you're the Bears and you're 43 and 50 and you want to move up to get a guy that's in the 20s, you'd have to be pretty well sold on the guy. And I'm not sure that the names we're talking about are gonna fit that description. Now, quarterback is subjective. You know, it may be that somebody – that Matt Nagy looks and goes, hey, I can make magic with this guy. We have to go get him. But I think, you know, again, in a vacuum, I think it's hard to imagine that value being there at that point that would justify using both of those picks on a guy that's not going to play for you this year.
Do you believe with what they did, and we've had the discussion about Foles and Trubisky, I won't even go there. Do you believe looking at this team, looking at that defense, we had Marcus Spears on, he said, I'm just telling you, if they're healthy, that defense could be absolutely suffocating to the opposition.
Yep.
Do you believe, looking at that team, that you get another playmaker in there, the Chicago Bears can absolutely make a deep run?
Yes, as long as you get consistent production from the quarterback position. I just think that's the biggest. And look, I feel like we were having the same conversation a year ago, right?
Yep.
And maybe 2 years ago. Where, like, they have to get consistent production from the quarterback position, and that's been their biggest question mark. And I think, you know, there are issues that come up during the season. Last year, concerns about, you know, Nagy's play calling and the offense. All that stuff looks better if your quarterback's someone you can count on. And no offense to Mitchell Trubisky, who, you know, is a nice young man and I'm sure trying very hard, but he hasn't, and I think he would admit, he hasn't established that level of consistency to the point where you can trust him week to week. So I think that's got to change. That's the motivation for the Foles deal, to give them coverage, someone who they think can be consistent if Trubisky can't. And I think that would unlock everything. I agree with Marcus. The defense is a championship caliber defense. I think, you know, you want to make sure your guy's protected, whoever the quarterback is. But I think the variety of people that Nagy has at disposal on offense and what they can do with the ball in their hands is impressive enough that if the quarterback were reliable and consistent week to week, I think you could see them jump right back up to where they were 2 years ago as a division champion, especially in a division where I think Green Bay probably takes a step back, where it looks like Minnesota is probably going to take a step back. I think there are reason to have high hopes there if they can get quarterback figured out.
Is there a team in New England that you think, hey, you know what, those Patriots actually surprised me and they're going to have a pretty good year? Or with Tom leaving and they don't have Gronk anymore, they didn't have the best weaponry, Tom made guys look better. What is New England going to be in 2020?
I think we got to give New England an incomplete on their offseason grade, because history tells us that what they do is look at – they don't look at like 2 weeks in March as the player action phase, right? They're going to be looking at trades right through the draft. I believe they make more trades than anyone. They'll be looking at options for, you know, guys that get shaken loose from other teams in training camp, that assuming you have training camp, that fit what they want to do that may have not fit what other teams do. They have a history of bringing in players that fit that description. So I trust Belichick. I like what Buffalo is doing. I think that's their biggest challenger right now in the AFC East, and I think people are going to pick the Bills to win it, and I think it's entirely possible that they do. But I just don't think at this point, on April 8th, with no offseason programs and with no idea who the quarterback's going to be or who they might still be able to get at wide receiver, et cetera, I don't think you can rule out Bill Belichick and the Patriots in terms of being a contender to have a strong year this year. Right now, you put all the teams on the field, their roster does not look like it's going to be competitive. But I don't think their roster right now looks like what it would look like theoretically 5 months from now if they're ready to start the season.
Hey, last thing, and I'll let you go, and greatly appreciate your time, and please stay safe and stay healthy with you and your clan. As you look at Bill Belichick versus Tom Brady, and then Brady sits down with Howard Stern this morning.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait to listen to the whole 2 hours and 19 minutes of it. Are you surprised Tom did something like that? Because Howard might be the best interviewer of all time.
Yeah, and what we've heard of it, I mean, it's some pretty good stuff. I'm not surprised, because I think a lot of the motivation, I mean, I think Tom, you know, Brady wanted to leave New England in part because, you know, 20 years in that system, and I don't want to use a word like oppressive, but I think that system limits, you know, what you're able to show about yourself, what you're able to, I think he wanted probably a little more freedom in terms of being himself, and I think that's probably part of it. And so to go on Howard Stern, I don't think it's any coincidence he does a Howard Stern interview in the early weeks of his non-New England career. I think that's something we can all assume he would not have done last year, or the year before, or 10 years ago. And I think it's no coincidence that he's doing it now. I think you see a guy that feels like he's more at liberty to show sides of himself that maybe he didn't feel. And a lot of people don't feel they're able to in New England, where Belichick has obviously run an incredibly successful program, but obviously part of it is subverting your individuality for the better of the team. And I think, you know, that can wear on people. To Tom's credit, he did it for 20 years.
Yep. So
it's worn on other people a lot sooner than that.
Hey, man, stay safe and healthy. Appreciate your time as always.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Fun to talk football with you.
You're the best. There he is, Dan Graziano, ESPN. You see him all over GetUp as well in SportsCenter. 312-332-3776. We'll be right back.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
We roll on ESPN 1000 with Danny and Chris. I'm David Kaplan, 312-332-3776. Danny, did you see Ray Allen go on Instagram? You can follow him at TRAYFOUR, Trey Four, because he wore number 34. So he is challenging all people that are bald, all going bald, or bald brothers, until we get our lives back from the Rona, as he calls it. Let your hair grow out. Don't shave your head. What do you think of that?
I think that's only fitting and fair. I mean, guys like Chris Black, myself, when we can go out and resume life, the line at my barbershop is going to be around the block. Like, those of us that are lucky enough to still have our hair, we need haircuts. So it's only fitting if you're in this with us. Grow that out, Cap. Let it go.
Yeah, no shot.
We got to look awkward. You got to look awkward.
Yeah, no shot.
Speaking of Ray Allen, this is interesting that I wanted to ask you guys about. Now's my segue to do it.
Uh-huh.
Kevin Garnett, he scoffed at the idea of the Timberwolves retiring his jersey. I bring up Kevin Garnett because he and Ray Allen were teammates in Boston winning a championship.
Mm-hmm.
He told The Athletic that he hasn't forgiven the Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor for things that went wrong in 2016 before he left Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want his jersey retired by the Timberwolves. And he said, quote, he doesn't do business with snakes. Now, when we're talking about the Bulls' search for the next GM, the next coach, why free agents don't come here, a lot of people want to cite the fact that Jerry Reinsdorf and the Bulls said goodbye to one of the greatest players ever in Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think what Kevin Garnett said about the Timberwolves and the fact that he doesn't want his name hanging from their rafters will affect them in the same way? Do you think in 10 years from now, we'll see the Timberwolves in an all-time drought of getting great players, and they're in a struggle to make the playoffs, and they're exactly what the crappy Bulls are that we have now? And people will be saying, you know why the Timberwolves stink? Because they burned Kevin Garnett, and Kevin Garnett called the owner a snake.
maybe. But again, it's Minnesota. It's not like a destination to
because
go play.
I ask you especially because you constantly poo-poo the narrative that letting Jordan go is what hurt this franchise for years and years to come. I don't think that it's why they're as crappy as they are now, but I certainly do think there was a period of time where there was a bad stench on the Bulls for saying goodbye to the greatest player ever. And it's an interesting lab experiment if this is true with the Bulls, if it will affect the Timberwolves in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, Carmelo Anthony, I read an interesting interview with him last couple months. I was on a plane going to do a game, and I'm reading it, and he said that when he came here, do you remember that summer when he came in here to visit and they got off that bus and it was him pulling up to the United Center, him, Tibbs, Pax, I don't know if Gar was there, a bunch of guys, and then he ended up staying in New York. That's when I started calling him Fraud Mello because he was only about the money. He said that he was told by people as he did his research, he said, I told my wife at the time, I'm going to Chicago. He said it was going to happen. He was going to buy in and come to the Bulls until he was told there's problems between Thibodeau and the front office, and once you're in the house, they're going to get rid of the coach. And he loved playing, the thought of playing for Tibbs. He knew him. And so if that's true, then they would have gotten the marquee free agent that year had they not screwed things up in the front office, and the Michael thing
what
had nothing
was,
to do with it.
What year was that?
Chris, what year was that? 2015, 14, when Carmelo Anthony was a free agent and visited the Bulls, and it came close, and it ended up he stayed in New York.
Let's say it's 2014.
Okay.
That's still 16 years after they got rid of Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Like, the stench of Jordan lasted, even if that's true, and Carmelo almost came here, 16 years later, so the stench of Jordan lasted 16 years? That's a long time, Cappy.
Yeah, but like...
You could have had a kid and he could have got his driver's license in that time.
Yeah, but look, Derrick Rose could have very easily said, I don't want to be a Bull when he was
coming. He got drafted here.
Understand, but he also said, I always wanted to be here.
He grew up here. That's a horrible, no offense, Cap.
Okay, Ben
That's
Wallace,
a horrible
okay.
example.
Ben Wallace was the number one
Cap
free agent when he signed.
Cap, we went out to dinner with your best friend, Kevin O'Neill. We heard some Ben Wallace stories. Ben Wallace was shown the money, and that's what mattered to Ben Wallace.
True. But again,
I think that it's a legitimate thing, and I think that if it's the case, the Timberwolves are in big trouble, that Kevin Garnett, one of the top players in NBA history, Hall of Famer.
That's just a bad franchise, though. Have they ever won
a championship? I don't think so.
No. I know they haven't won a championship.
Flip Saunders is one of the most respected coaches ever before he passed away.
They hadn't gone to the playoffs in like 14 freaking years. Tibbs took him there two years ago, and then they got rid of him. So... that's just not a very good franchise. Would they have like a 19-game losing streak this year? I don't think I can compare them to the Bulls. Look, did the Bulls screw up and not give... they should have given Michael a small piece of the franchise and said, hey, we want you to be part of our ownership group forever. Forever. Be part of it. I completely agree with that. Bulls versus Timberwolves, I don't know. That I don't know. 312-332-3776. Jerm on Twitter said, hey, Danny, Chris, no shot. Us ball guys are looking, we're looking clean and good. Laughing at all you unkempt, hairy animals. So, yeah, I would look horrible. If I let my hair grow, do you know how bad that would look? Like nothing up top and then this big horseshoe in the back?
You'd look like Larry David. He pulls it off. You watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. He always winds up with a beautiful woman. It might have to do with the fact he's worth $500 million, maybe.
Yeah, I can't do it. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. 1050, we are going to talk to Danny Manning, the former Kansas star, now head coach at Wake Forest. 11:35, the game. Okay, I got completely destroyed yesterday by Yurko. Completely destroyed.
You got one right. For the audience that missed it, and shame on you for missing it because it's must-listen-to radio, Yurko got four right in 1 minute
and 14
seconds. When
Yurko missed
the
first two, and then I got my first one, did you start to think, oh, my God.
Well, we thought when Yurko only got four that the door was wide open for
him. I heard Black. Black kept saying, the door is open.
I thought you could at least get four. I thought the golf questions, I thought you knew old-timey golf. I was wrong.
Yeah. Like, I misunderstood.
How did you not get Gary Player? That, to me, is a layup.
Yeah, I didn't
get... What other famous old golfer is there? Not from here.
And, like, Sam Snead, the first person to be awarded the green jacket.
Yeah, that's where I screwed up, because I, like... Well, Sam... Like, I didn't even think of Sam Snead, because I went way back. I said old Tom Morris.
Yes. Wasn't the first person to ever win the Masters.
My wife, watched the whole Twitch broadcast last night of that trivia contest.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not good either at pop culture. But when she heard the music, and she said, she stopped and she goes, "Who did you guess for this music?" And I said, "Radiohead." She's like, "You didn't." I'm like, "I did." She's like, "You know, if you just said Judas Priest or somebody like that, okay, you missed out, but it's that genre." She goes, "Radiohead versus Metallica? What, are you out of your mind?" Yep, that was her husband.
Would you even know what Radiohead sounds like?
No. 312-332-3776. It is holiday weekend. We got Easter, we got Passover starting tonight, and we handicap today's matchup of the game. Next.
Cap. This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Rolling on ESPN 1000 with Danny Zetterman, Chris Black. I'm David Kaplan.
Did I really just see you do that?
Do what?
Did you just spray Lysol on your face?
No.
What were you spraying onto your face? What was that?
It's a product. It's called Nature's...
I'm running the board over here. We're coming back from commercial break. I say, here we go, guys. The standard Bleck response before we come back from break. I look up, and you're spraying Lysol in your face.
No, it's not Lysol, kid.
What is that?
It's the stuff I used when I had the shingles. It's called Nature's Silver Lining, and the biochemist who invented this stuff, he sent it to me. He's a really good guy, Jeff, and he said, "This is what we believe makes our Micronic Spray Shingles better than typical hand sanitizer. Hand sanitizer contains a minimum of 60% alcohol, which is good for killing foreign invaders, but it evaporates on the skin in minutes. This means while it kills stuff on your skin, it does not prevent infections after it evaporates. Our Micronic Shingles not only helps your immune system kill foreign invaders, it leaves behind the Micronic Silver on the skin when the water base evaporates, which works on stopping future infections. You could spray it on your masks, face, hands, nose, in your eyes. You can't do that with a hand sanitizer."
Well, okay, I'm not looking for the promo for the product. I looked up, and you're spraying something all over your face that looked like hand sanitizer / Lysol spray. That's what I saw. Danny, did you see him spraying it all over his face?
I didn't see him spray it. I just got your reaction, and I thought it was classic.
What is going on in there?
Yep, that's right. I spray it on, kid. So, anyway...
That's awesome.
312-332-3776. We'll get to the phones in a minute. Danny, today is the start of Passover. This weekend we've got Easter, and I think the following week we've got Greek Easter. So it's the holiday season. Now, normally, my family, my wife is Greek, but we go to my brother Bruce and my sister-in-law Wendy's house for Seder. Obviously, that's canceled. So we're doing a Zoom Seder tonight.
That's going to be incredibly interesting.
Yes.
So you all have to have the same food, right?
Yeah. No, we're just going to all eat whatever we want to eat.
But you're not going to do the Seder?
Yeah, we're going to. He's going
to
leave.
Well, to do the Seder, you have to have matzah. You have to have bitter herbs. You have to have the haroset, which is like the mortar between the bricks. Like, there's certain parts of the Seder that you all have to have to observe the
Correct,
Seder.
Correct, but the main meal, we're just going to eat whatever it is we want to eat.
But are you going to do the Seder portion? Is someone going to ask the four questions?
Are you going to have
the four cups of wine? Are you going to do the ten plagues?
Yes.
Okay, so who's going to lead that?
My brother.
All right, that's going to be unique. We are, so like you, I'd normally be at my parents' house for the Seder. We always do the Seder together as a family, but because of what's going on with the COVID-19 pandemic, nobody can leave their house. My uncle, Uncle Bill, he is going to do a Seder via Zoom as well, and he's invited the whole family to participate, but he's very conservative, and he's going to do every single word of the Seder. And I've got three little kids, and that's just probably not going to fly. So we're not going to tap into that. I'm going to just have my own little Seder tonight. But, like, I wonder for, like, Chris on Easter, I don't know if he's a churchgoer or not, if he's going to miss church. But, like, Easter takes on a whole different complexion Sunday. Are you going to do a Zoom Easter?
Have not talked to my parents about it. I know my my mother-in-law, I think there's going to be something where there's some kind of conference Zoom situation. I know there were discussions about people coming over places, and my wife and I were not happy with those details. So we were trying to let the rest of the group know that it's not the best idea to bring people together, even though we all think individually we might be safe. Who knows who is a
asymptomatic carrier?
Right. And I'm around you guys, which you guys may think that you guys are okay, but you're more than one person, and who knows? Mm-hmm. So we were having that fun conversation last night, trying to convince the family that, yeah, it's not a good idea to, even if you say, hey, everyone come over and just hang out in the backyard. I don't think that that's going to be a prime solution to this. So I think there'll be some Zoom involved in the situation.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people are having these conversations, but, like, listen, it's just, it doesn't, if you go by all the health organizations, it does not seem like the good idea to add people to your network who you haven't been around for the last 10 to 14 to however long we've been kind of self-quarantining.
Agreed.
For me, it's weird because, like, Passover is a big holiday in the Jewish religion. Mm-hmm. And for me, it doesn't feel like Passover. Like, I'm going to do something with my wife and my three kids, just us, to observe it. I want to observe the tradition. But it's not going to be a normal Seder. And it's not. It doesn't feel the same. There's not that grandeur to the holiday that there normally is. This damn coronavirus is stealing so much from us.
And the same thing for Easter. That's a big holiday for people that are Christian. A huge, huge holiday. Some people.
Yeah, Easter's huge.
Like,
huge.
I asked, yeah. Chris, tell me if I'm right. A friend of mine said, dude, Christmas is way too commercial for him. He said, I look at Easter as a bigger holiday for him. Do you agree with that at all?
I mean, it's to each his own.
Yeah.
You're asking Chris to do the power rankings of the holidays.
Yeah, do you want my religious power rankings? Is that what we're doing?
Like, what's the most important on the Christian calendar? I mean, so he feels it's Easter, this buddy of mine.
Easter, so, or Christmas. Yeah. Those are the two.
One of the two.
Where do you stand on All Saints Day?
I ring 4th of July after both of those. 4th of July is after.
Are we going to have 4th of July this year?
First day you make a bet on college football.
Yeah, Labor Day, that's a pretty good weekend.
Oh, I hate Labor Day. Worst day of the entire year. It signifies summer's
I'm
over.
I'm with Danny.
Oh, hate
oh,
it.
Summer's Memorial still alive.
Day. Now, Memorial Day is a day to celebrate.
It's always cold and windy on Memorial Day.
It doesn't matter.
It's my birthday
is
usually
that weekend. I know it's coming then.
It's what it represents. You know, like, the shortest day of the year is a great day because it means the days are only going to get longer. And don't at me, Huebner. I know all days are 24 hours. But the day with the least amount of sunlight is the best day of the year because it means every day gets longer thereafter. Whereas the day with the most amount of sunlight, you know, in June, is a crappy day because you know they're only going to get shorter thereafter.
So I talked to Danny's sister last night, Debbie, who she said, Cap, I listen to you guys all the time. You make me laugh a lot. I like listening to you guys spar. But don't ever let my brother tell you he was anywhere near as good an athlete as her, as me. And I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, Danny likes people to think he was a really good athlete. She goes, I was the athlete in the family. Do you co-sign with what your sister said?
No. Here's the deal. First of all, she was a professional figure skater, so she was a very, very good athlete. And if it came to a foot race, she beat me every time because her legs were made out of stone. Mm-hmm. However, and I've told her this 1,000 times, you know, this is back in the 90s when we were growing up, but had she been around today, she'd set women's rights back a generation. Because every time we played a sport and I'd win, she'd say, I get another shot at it because I'm a girl. Or if we played horse, she would get two shots because she's a girl. She wasn't a better athlete than me.
She also told me that when you were in the second grade, you had a penchant for making up stories when you came home from school. And so that you told your parents and her that you came home in the second grade and had to dress up like the Easter Bunny and then hop around the class, and your parents found out it was 100% not true.
I was always an entertainer, Cap. Anything for the sake of entertainment. That is, has ended up benefiting you and hopefully the whole audience.
Oh, it was so great. I talked to your dad for quite a while, and then your sister called, and we talked for probably 45 minutes. Your dad and her, sweethearts. I haven't talked to your mom on the phone, so I'm assuming she is, too. What happened to you?
Listen, my dad and my sister are more like you. They don't like to be alone. They like to converse on the phone. They're very social. I'm the opposite. I love the fact, Chris, have you noticed? Because I will not talk to Cap on the phone, he's taken to calling my whole family.
It really is a turn I did not see coming during this COVID-19 outbreak. I did not see that Cap getting so lonely that he's now calling our family members to chat. I didn't see that one on the board. If we had the spin the board of things that Cap will do while he's bored, I did not see calling Harry Zerman and catching up some old stories about Danny Boy.
The day I come downstairs and my oldest son Avery's FaceTiming Cap will be the day I lose it. Avery, what are you doing? Oh, I'm talking to Cappy.
Well, remember that time when Cap, who was the wife that you were FaceTiming? Didn't we have a story where Cap was FaceTiming someone's wife?
Shay.
Was that the first time? I thought there was another one.
No.
Because I know Shay and Jordan.
No, Boyle's wife.
Yeah, Boyle's wife.
I never FaceTimed Boyle's wife.
Yeah, there's a story. There was a story.
I called her on her birthday.
Yeah.
I didn't FaceTime her.
Okay, yeah, call. Yeah. Same
100%.
Thing. 100%.
Phone call. 100%.
Yeah.
I never will again.
I never will again.
No. Boyle was rude about it, so that's fine. 312-332-377. I'm going to be me. I'm going to do what I do, and that's bring people together and connect.
No, it's funny. I just like your response. Never again.
Yep, never again. 312-332-3776. We're going to talk to Danny Manning, the former Kansas star, next.
Sports talk while you're on the clock. Cap and Company.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Hey, this hour brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs, for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, through it all. We got a few minutes to catch up with Danny Manning. And when I said to Danny Zetterman, hey, you want Danny Manning on? He's like, hell yes, because he's a Kansas grad. And Danny Manning joins us now. He's the head basketball coach at Wake Forest, but of course, he's known from Danny and the Miracles when they won it. Danny, how do we find you? Everybody's safe and healthy in your household.
We're very blessed, and everybody's doing okay, so I appreciate that. Hope the same for all of you.
Absolutely. So Danny Zetterman, our producer, he is like your biggest fan, man. In fact, I learned a story today that he went to, was it Chili's, Danny?
It was Chili's, yeah, in Lawrence, Kansas.
So he went to Chili's in Lawrence, Kansas. You were back in town. This is what year, Danny?
I went there. I was on the five-year program. So I went there 95 to 2000, so somewhere in there.
And you were back in town, and he and his buddies had already finished eating their meal, and they sat there. You had just gotten your food. They sat and waited so they could walk out of the restaurant with you and talk to you.
Wow. Okay.
We didn't want to interrupt your dinner. We had manners.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, so I remember that. I mean, I remember the Chili's. We went there a lot. That was close to where we were living.
So when you look back on those times, you're now a head coach and you've been an assistant, you played in the NBA, and forget the money, all of it. What was your favorite time of your basketball career? Is it being a head coach? Is it, hey, man, that moment I took Stacey King to the cup, I laid it in and we won the national title?
You know what? They all have very vivid and fond memories for me. As a player, obviously, I enjoyed, you know, playing for great coaches coming up. My father introduced me to the game, and then playing for the legendary Larry Brown in college and the terrific staff of guys he had, and then playing professionally. So, you know, for me, it just dates back to, I go back to all the relationships that I was able to form because of the game of basketball and because of the people that were mentoring me and helping me. So I feel very fortunate, and I don't know any correct way to answer that question other than saying I was very fortunate to have the people around me and the mentors and coaches to help me on my journey.
What was it like battling a guy who broadcasts now and comes on this show? He's the voice of the Bulls. You against Stacey King.
Hey, Stacey was a handful, no question about it. You know, he played for teams that were fast and athletic when he was at Oklahoma, and they were always fun to play up against, but he was always a nightmare to guard because he was so talented.
Yeah, he is as entertaining a guy. Was he a trash talker on the court?
Yeah, he didn't mind sharing his energy levels with different people out there from time to time.
Which made it fun for you, right?
We enjoyed it. You know, you go out there, and that's just part of the game. You know, that's part of trying to get into somebody's head and trying to create an advantage for your team or for yourself.
So you're now the head basketball coach at Wake Forest. I got to call one of your games when you played at Richmond a season ago. How do you stay in touch and keep, I don't know what the right word, make sure you're on top of what's going on with your players because, you know, nobody's around anybody.
Well, it's all done remotely now. So we spend a lot of time, phone calls, FaceTime, texting. We're doing video sessions in terms of getting everybody together and seeing the faces pop up on the screens and things of that nature. So, you know, it's a very challenging time in regards to what all of our students are going through academically now because it's all virtual learning, online or distance learning, whatever adjective that you like to use. And so, you know, they've got their hands full with that. And then as a team, we're just trying to stay connected. So, you know, for us, I know our guys do a really good job of reaching out to one another and touching base on a, you know, daily, checking in with different teammates. And, you know, we're thankful to have such a close, tight-knit group. And, you know, I can't wait till those guys get back on campus.
So we've got this amazing 10-part Bulls documentary that ESPN has rushed to get out. It was supposed to come out in late June. Now it's going to come out April the 19th. And in this city, we cannot wait. First two episodes, and the next week, the next two. Like, it's going to be amazing. You had to play against those teams. What was that experience like going up against the team that I think is the greatest NBA team of all time, the Chicago Bulls?
Well, you know, it was not just another game just because of, you know, Michael was there, Pitt was there. Then you go back and look at Harp and Rodman and Luke and all the other talented players that they had. So, you know, going into it, you knew it was going to be a fun playoff-type atmosphere because that's what the games were like, especially when you go back and those runs were happening when they were still in the old gym.
So Neil Funk is the voice of the Bulls. He's getting ready to retire. He was on with our midday guys, Carmen and Yurko, last week, and he said that after the Dream Team in the Olympics won, he said, I had a chance to spend some time with a friend, Chuck Daly, the late Chuck Daly. And I said, okay, you just coached the Dream Team, greatest collection of players ever. Who's the best player on the team? And he said, look, Michael's an amazing talent, and he'll go down as probably the greatest ever. But on that team, in that setting, the best player on our team was Scottie Pippen. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I think when you look at that Dream Team, you know, obviously they were spectacular and brought so much notoriety and attention to our wonderful game of basketball. But, you know, Pip's size, his versatility, the different places that you can move him out there on that team. I mean, he's kind of like a baseball player that can play any position. So you can put your other eight best players out there and you throw Pip out there because you know he's going to be great in any role you put him in.
Hey, man, we appreciate you taking a few minutes for us. Keep up the great work, and best of luck to you and to your family and to your basketball program.
Thanks very much. You guys have a wonderful day and stay safe.
You too. There he is, Danny Manning. He's a Kansas grad. He's the head coach at Wake Forest now. All right, my plan for the Bulls' future, and I want your feedback. 312-332-3776. We are back in 2 minutes.